Well, then, small ball, alive and well, perhaps. Contrary to popular belief, down here at the Dome. It's something you and I have discussed many, many times. Something the listeners have clamored for. The Jays, after heading into the eighth inning with just two hits, and they slowly chip away at the Royals. A 5-2 win today for the Blue Jays to complete this series sweep. And I got to think that, and Ben were talking about this on the wrap-up, but that is just what the doctor ordered for this stretch of games that now wraps up for teams under 500. So they complete that stretch at 10-5. And we can discuss, certainly with the listeners, and you and I can discuss it, like if that was good enough. I know Buck had said to Blair and Barker before the stretch that they needed to go 12-3. But, hey, I mean, with some fortunate play from other teams facing the teams in the wild card race, the Blue Jays right now find themselves in the second wild card spot, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't know what the Texas Rangers were doing really when we started this stretch, and at the end of the day, you don't have to outrun the Bear, you just have to outrun the Texas Rangers if the Bear gets to them first. And I think one thing I can say pretty confidently is the whole stretch, I could see if people have their nitpicks or their issues with it. But the Blue Jays, they started poorly. They lose that series to Cleveland. Then they go 2-3 with Washington. And a lot of people said, okay, next 9 games, what do you have to do?
Right.
7-2 feels pretty solid. Like, I'm not sure you can ask for a whole lot more out of a Major League Baseball club than to win all 3 series in front of them and sweep one of them. Were there wins left on the table in some of these series over the past 5? There were, but also, you know, they got gifted 2 runs today. Like, things happen in baseball, and I think that the Blue Jays are playing some of their best baseball, at least, some of their winningest baseball, some of their most offensively powered baseball at the right time. And with a lot of momentum as they get set to face off the Texas Rangers in what will be the biggest series of the season, the start of probably what we'll say in a row is like six of the biggest series of the season.
I was going to say.
But it will be the biggest series of the season thus far, for sure, coming up against Texas.
I look forward to when we do Jays Talk next weekend against the Red Sox.
The biggest series of the season. That one might be the only one where it's like, I'm not sure that's the biggest series of the season.
Well, then after that Red Sox series, they're going to go on the road, and it's the biggest road trip of the season.
It's the last road trip of the season.
That's also true.
We could get away with it.
That's Ben Shulman. I'm Sho Ali. Welcome to Jay Stock on the Sportsnet Radio Network, streaming live on sportsnet.ca and, of course, on the Sportsnet app. Taking your calls and texts. Phone lines are open, 416-870-0590, 1-888-660-590, *590 on your cellular device. 590-590 is where you can text us. That is the People's Text Line, and it is always open. And, I wanted to get to the small ball stuff first, Ben, just because
sure.
I feel like over the year, and I've seen the text line, and I've heard the calls certainly for Blair and Barker when those guys are on, and certainly when you and I do it, and when Julia's done it with me as well, when you guys have done Jay's Talk Plus, when Blake's done it, like, you know, you hear a lot from the fans, as we want. And there's been a lot of asking, I think, for small ball. Now, of course, it's one game. You're not going to – I always say I don't think any win or loss should be a referendum on the entire season by any means, right? It's a broader stretch of games, certainly. But, boy, that – the stuff in the eighth inning I thought was incredibly impressive, right? So they pinch run for Kirk – in the eighth. It was Varsho who came in, and it did raise the eyebrow a bit because Varsho, of course, has caught before, but in a one-run game.
I'm almost certain he's not going to catch at all this season.
I think
like,
you're right.
We're 143 games into the season now.
Yeah, you're probably right. Like, maybe if it was a complete blowout, maybe they throw him,
maybe.
They let him throw out the pads on for fun, but in a one-run game where you really need a win, especially with whatever's going on in the wildcard race, you, I think, rightly go to Heinemann. But that eighth inning had some great plays for the small ball crowd, right? Whit Merrifield dumps a single through the hole that it looked like Michael Massey vacated as he was kind of going to the bag. The ball kind of squirted closer to second base than it was to first base, but it kind of squirted right into, I guess, right center field.
Yeah.
Varsho never breaks stride. He had a great read on it. He gets all the way to third. Espinal lays down a terrific bunt, which I think, like, for a guy who has really struggled at bunting at times when he's asked to bunt, that was actually a very good bunt from Santiago Espinal. There was a text actually on the text line, I think it was from Riley in Edmonton, And he says it here: we have complained for so long about people like Espinal not being able to bunt when needed. Obviously, these guys are working on the right things, even if it doesn't work all the time. Needs to be acknowledged. And Bill in Mississauga, awesome ball. Great to see guys getting on base, cashing in the last couple of innings, regardless of how they score. And then Kevin Biggio bloops the hit over Witt Jr.'s head into the outfield and scores a run from second. We just haven't seen a lot of terrific small ball plays over the course of this season, but they'd really chipped away at it, and it's good to see.
Yeah, I mean, they have a couple of guys in Varsho and Belt who I think are solid at bunting for base hits, but it's right. I mean, I think a lot of the reason they've shied away, I mean, to be clear, all of baseball sacrifices, like, significantly less than they did 10 years ago and significantly less than they did 10 years before that, but the Blue Jays haven't done it a lot because I think a guy like Espinal would be a candidate to do it often, and he has not had a ton of success. At least it is the gut feeling that I have. They don't record necessarily unsuccessful sacrifices in any sort of stat, but he has not had the most success in that situation, but he has a lot of success here. Enough so, like you said, with the nice bunt that they credit him on a single. I kind of thought it was a fielder's choice, but that doesn't really matter. The throw goes home, but Varsho breaking on contact on a safety squeeze, which I find both more and less risky than a suicide squeeze where you're stealing the guy home, ends up scoring pretty easily. But it is pretty big for the Blue Jays. I especially love the play. You talked about the Merrifield single. To put the hit and run on there, because have Whit Merrifield, and he's struggling a little bit right now. There's no doubt about that. And he's actually hit into a fair number of double plays. So you have some faith that, okay, he's putting some balls on the ground. You know Varsho can steal a bag even if Merrifield swings and misses. So you both give Merrifield an easy opportunity to roll a ground ball and give Varsho a shot to go first to third very easily. It all ends up working out, and that kind of springboards the inning for the Blue Jays. It's big. I mean, they did not have a great offensive day today. They scored incredibly ugly for most of the game. They walked 8 times today, too, which isn't the ugly part. But, you know, like, the Kansas City Royals, frankly, beat themselves almost as much today as the Toronto Blue Jays won. But the Blue Jays didn't put themselves in situations to give it up. When they were given opportunities, they capitalized. And the small ball was a big part of that. I don't think they're going to use it all the time, but especially with, when you think about how much power is just not in the lineup right now and how many of their marquee hitters are not in the lineup right now. Yeah, when you get down to that bottom of the order, if you can, you know, get a little creative, you're going to get a little creative. And for the Blue Jays, it tended to work out today.
Yeah, I do think, and I see some text here on the text line, you know, temper expectations, because it is for against teams like the Rangers and the Rays and the Yankees, because it, of course, it, you're beating the teams that you should beat, which I think is a completely valid point. But I think there are smaller pieces, kind of the things we're talking about with the Merrifield single and the small ball and so on, and we'll get to Jose Barrios, we'll get to Kevin Kiermaier's home run and so on, but like there are smaller things that it's nice to see the Blue Jays do well, and it's nice to also see them maybe use those smaller building blocks and to continue to grow in that direction as they hope to take 3 of 4 from the Texas Rangers, for example, which is, I think, what you want to have the tiebreaker over the Rangers for the season series. Like, things like that, essentially. So I feel like I totally get the points about, you know, pump the brakes a little bit. It's the Royals. But also because the Blue Jays have been a team that has been a little inconsistent over time, so it's nice to see some of these, maybe fundamental is the wrong word, but things like that go well for them instead of executing it poorly like we've seen at times.
Yeah, I mean, their recent run of good plays, obviously against 3 of the worst teams in Major League Baseball. There's no doubt about that. You also don't, like, build most of your winning streaks playing the Braves and then the Dodgers and then the Orioles and then the Rangers in a row or something that. You know, like, look at where win streaks come often, especially for everyone but a team like the Braves or the Dodgers. It's going to be against weaker parts of the schedule. And I think that plays into to some of the small ball. The Blue Jays, I think, are more willing to play for 1 or 2 runs. They obviously ended up scoring multiple runs in that inning, but I think they're more willing to play for 1 or 2 runs when they're going up against a team like the Royals, because they know they're a low-scoring team, and although the Royals did load the bases in the top of the 9th inning and make it real interesting, the likelihood that they're going to come back and score 1 or even multiple runs is a lot lower than, you know, you have 1st and 3rd and you're playing against the Orioles. Well, you might want to think about scoring more than 1 run in that situation, and so you're not going to potentially give up an out. Santiago Espinal doesn't end up getting out because he reaches first base on a really nice bunt, but the Blue Jays were effectively giving away an out there that just didn't come to fruition. So it's about week schedule, but this was also, I mean, a month ago we were talking about, like, hey, the Mariners are probably going to pass the Blue Jays. They're playing a really tough schedule, and then the Blue Jays are probably going to pass the Mariners back. And that's not to say that we're any sort of geniuses. It's just how the schedule works.
Sure.
You know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
you don't play evenly at the same time, and because of that, you're going to have some peaks and valleys due to how well you're playing and also due to how good your opponents are. And the Blue Jays, at least over the last three series, really capitalize.
Blue Jays get their 80th win of the season with a sweep over the Royals, who lose their 100th game of the season following the 5-2 Blue Jays win over KC. 416-870-0590, 1-888-660-590, *590 on your cells. Those are the numbers to call. We'll go back to the text line in a sec, 590-590, name and location. Eddie in Fort Erie getting us started. Eddie, what's on your mind? Welcome to Jays Talk.
Thank you, gentlemen. How are you today? You know what, guys? Next to opening day, September is my favorite month of the year. Not only the pennant races, but the NFL is underway. And today I was doing a little bit of a juggling act. I was listening to the game on the radio and watching the games today. Man, it's so good. I'm so happy right now. But you know what?
I agreed, Eddie. I got to say, I was doing my best here. It's helped that it was a close game, but with the NFL always tries to steal away attention, especially in week one. But you're right, it's good. Great NFL action, and certainly a good Blue Jays win, right?
Yeah, but unfortunately my team is not doing very well right now, but that's another story in the game that I'm watching right now. But so anyway, a couple of things. First of all, when I talk about the Kevin Kiermaier home run, you know what, guys? For something like that, for him to do that was perfect, because he's been the spark plug of this team all year with his great defensive work that we all know that he had. And when you hit a home run like that in a pennant race, it really ignites, you know, the team and the players and the fans, you know, because I heard he grabbed the microphone and he told everybody to, you know, get loud after the game, right? If that's what happened, I don't know, but I'm just thinking here. But that's what I thought. Now, I got my bags packed, gentlemen, because I am ready to take a trip down to Memory Lane City, because you know what? With this Rangers series coming up, I could not think of a better way to go down to that little town. And you know what we'll do, guys? When we get we should get the red carpet out, welcome the Rangers into Toronto, and after the Rangers leave, give them a nice parting gift, that being a crying towel, just like it was in 15 and 16, and put the final nail in their coffin, because I cannot wait for this series. I don't care if we're in the second wild card spot or in the third, we got to put the Rangers away. And that's all there is to it. Thank you very much.
Great, Eddie. Thanks. He's pumped up. Eddie's really jacked up for this Rangers series starting tomorrow. Certainly Kevin Kiermaier, the bulk of Eddie's call has been great. Like, he's been a phenomenal signing for the Blue Jays. He obviously cracks in one of the biggest home runs, maybe the biggest home run of his very short Blue Jays career. A lot of texts on Kevin Kiermaier, actually. There was one, Edward in Alberta. It just says, in all caps, bring back Kevin Kiermaier. There was another one I was seeing earlier here. Drew in Nanaimo on the West Coast. Drew says, all year people have been talking about Kiermaier leaving this offseason. Why wouldn't the Jays re-sign him? Seems like a no-brainer. He's been great all season and a fan favorite. I don't think it's necessarily like a fait accompli that he's gone. It's just
I have no idea, truthfully.
That's what it is. I think it's just perhaps Kiermaier's a little older. Farshow is not quite as old. They both are very good defensive players. It depends on certainly what like Kiermaier would ask for. But I gotta say, to the guy's credit, he has endeared himself to the fans here in Toronto very quickly, after spending a large, if not his entire career, as effectively a villain playing for the Rays.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to bring it up, but it's a very different world than it was when he stole that pitch calling card a long time ago as a member of the Tampa Bay Rays against the Blue Jays and was like public enemy number one. But I you know, he has been great, and it'll be interesting to see what teams offer him. I think what the competition will be on him will decide a lot of whether they want to bring him back, because there's no doubt he's been a productive player. I don't think anyone would argue against that. And I do think these last 2 days, you've seen why the Blue Jays wanted to be maybe just a little bit older this year, a little bit more experience. You have today Kiermaier coming up with the huge hit, and yesterday it was George Springer, and they just have a lot of guys. Even on the road trip, you had several big hits from Brandon Belt before he ended up needing to miss some time as well. And I think the Blue Jays have a lot more been there, done that than maybe they have even in the past couple of years. They have a lot of guys who have played in pennant races, have played at the highest level. And I mean, when you're talking about Springer and Kiermaier, these are guys who did it perennially. Like, the Houston Astros and Tampa Bay Rays have both been playoff teams pretty much every single year for the last 6-7 years at this point. So they're not going to get discouraged by the fact that the record might not be where it should be right now. I mean, Kevin Kiermaier's Tampa Bay Rays walked in with 86 wins to the playoffs last year. You just got to turn it on. You just got to outrun the guy in between you and the bear, like he knows. And at the end of the day, the Blue Jays are really starting to get some dividends from some of their more experienced guys, both on the pitching side in a Berríos and a Gausman, and on the hitting side in Kiermaier and Springer, all playoff experienced guys.
Speaking of Kevin Kiermaier, he did speak, well,
he dominated the mic.
At Arden, he kind of felt
Eddie
like
he was right. He grabbed the mic.
Yeah, it kind of felt like he was cutting a promo out there down in front of the Blue Jays dugout. Let's actually hear it. This is what the Kevin Kiermaier quote-unquote interview, walk-off interview sounded like with Arden Zwelling after this 5-2 win.
A game-winning, series-sweeping home run for Kevin Kiermaier.
Hey! We got three weeks left of the season. Rogers Center, you've been electric all year. Hey, we need it. We've been working for October all year. We're going, okay? You guys ready? Let's go.
That's the whole interview. That's all that happened. You know what actually happened? So he took the mic from Arden. You can kind of hear Arden getting geared up.
He was about to ask him a question.
Yeah, and then he takes the mic from out of his hand. And then so Kiermaier walks down the dugout steps, or is about to walk down the dugout steps. And then Vladdy, because Vladdy kind of takes his time.
Kiermaier kind of volunteered for it.
He did, yes. And then so as Vladdy usually grabs the Gatorade jug from inside the dugout, walks out the gate that's closer to home plate, and then kind of walks around to dump the Gatorade on the whoever it is. And because Kiermaier was so quick, Vladdy just dumped it on him right there in front of the steps, and then they both went inside. So Kiermaier, had a very WWE vibe when he grabbed the microphone, but I'm not complaining. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, and Ben was talking about, I don't know the last time someone grabbed it. I'm kind of thinking there was, I want to say 2014, Munenori Kawasaki walks off a game, grabs right. the mic, and yells out to the crowd, "My name is Munenori Kawasaki, and I'm Japanese," and gets a huge ovation. One of my favorite Blue Jay moments, honestly, of all time. And I can't remember someone doing it in between. I mean, you know, Kevin Kiermaier, like we were saying, has really endeared himself. I think he's a super easy guy to root for. He's been awesome defensively, and he's having one of the better offensive years of his career. And, I mean, the notoriety isn't just here. Midway through this season, Mike Petriello of MLB.com wrote about how Kevin Kiermaier, was trying to get him to the All-Star game. It was talking about, should we rethink his whole career? He's probably one of the greatest defenders we've ever seen. And really, you know, he's brought all of that and more, and just a lot of life to the clubhouse. Seems like everyone likes him a ton. And, you know, he's continuing to produce and kind of defying the odds, frankly, of what many center fielders are going to do in their mid-30s, and Kiermaier is doing it. So a huge, huge offensive day for him, and the Blue Jays obviously way better for it.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. Matthew in Hamilton joining us here on Jays Talk. Matt, what's on your mind?
How's it going, guys? 7-2 on this trip against the worst teams in the league. You know what? Hey, any team can beat you on any given night, but I'm pretty happy about that. We got a sweep. We're 7-2. This is fantastic, right? I'm not going to play pessimistic today, even though normally when I call in, I always got something bad to say. But no, today's going to be a good day. But I got a question for you guys. So especially over these last, let's say, 9 games, I've been really impressed with Santiago Espinal. He's just looked like he hasn't missed any time out there. And I know we got Matt Chapman. We got one of the best defensive gloves at third base. But I can't help but think, and you know, that maybe this team is just better with Matt Chapman sitting on the bench, right? And I know he's going to get his games. I know from a defensive perspective, you can't compare the two. But from the quality of hits and at-bats that we're getting, right, I think Santiago's has played himself into a starting position, right? I'm sure Chapman's going to have a run, he's going to get a run for his money here, right? If you were John Schneider, what would you do? Thanks, guys.
Hey, man, thanks, Matt. Thanks for joining us here on Jays Talk. I think Matt brings up a point about Chapman that I think a lot of people are debating. And again, I really do think once Chapman comes back, he probably, just being a veteran on the team, and I think John Schneider has shown that he does largely, at least start, favor veterans. I feel like Chapman is going to get some games. Having said that, I do kind of wonder if maybe going forward, is he going to play? Like, if the Blue Jays play 7 games in 7 days, is Chapman going to play all 7 games? Probably not. Maybe he shouldn't. Maybe a part of that is because he's coming off an injury, in which, you know, there was points where Hazel was talking about how Chapman couldn't even make a fist at certain points. So maybe, much like Bo, he'll be kind of workload wise worked back into it. But I do wonder about Chapman, because as much as he has brought defensively, which is perhaps the best defensive player on the team, and we just talked about Kevin Kiermaier and Dalton Varsho, who are probably the next two guys, but I mean, offensively, it has not been very good over the course of much of the season before he won that player of the month in the very first month of the season.
Yeah, when you look at it, I mean, he had a good first month. He had a pretty good July. He has an on-base plus slugging over 900 in July, and then August really went south for him, and he hasn't even played in September. I'm regardless of my opinion, I'm almost sure he's playing almost every single game when he's back, to be honest. Now, do they not rush him as much because they feel a little bit better about what they have going on at third? I think that's possible. I do think that Espinal has hit better recently. I think Biggio's frankly hit even better than him recently. Espinal has, yeah. And on the whole for the season, Espinal hits for a slightly higher average, but Biggio, it's mostly singles from Espinal. Biggio pretty much makes up for that and walks and hits more homers. Espinal played a good defensive game at third today. Biggio came in, I thought he was pretty solid, and played a good game yesterday at third as well. So I think that it could turn a little more into like 5 out of 7 than 7 out of 7.
That is reasonable.
But I mean, frankly, a lot of the bad months for Matt Chapman are the seasonal numbers for both of the two guys that play third base. Like, the expectations are a lot different, and I'm not sure that Matt Chapman is losing very much time to either of those guys when he's fully healthy to do so. That's just my opinion, but I think that the expectations being way different sometimes frames the way we look at it. Like, Espinal today goes 1 for 4, and I truthfully think benefits from a scoring decision. Like, the guy picked up the ball, the pitcher picked up the ball and never even thought about throwing to first. That's a fielder's choice to me. He went home. Do I think the pitcher could have retired Santiago Espinal off that bunt? I think probably. But regardless of that, I do think he's hit well recently. I just think that the ceiling, first of all, is a lot higher, I think, for Matt Chapman. They want some power, and the defense, like mentioned on the call, I think just helps make even more of the case that he'll play there majority of the time. Again, maybe it's 5 out of 7. Instead of, he was pretty much an everyday, like legitimately everyday player.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe it's 5 out of 7 at this point. You have gotten a lot more production out of Biggio and Espinal over the last 2 weeks than you're used to. You could play Schneider there as well. But I don't see like a major change, in my opinion, to Matt Chapman's job when he comes back.
Let's bring in our next caller, Ian from Brockville, into this conversation. Ian wants to weigh in as well on this Espinal over Chapman thing at third base.
Hey guys, how are you?
Good. How are you? How are you, Ian? How's it going?
Good. Good. So I was just listening to the caller. You know, he was right about Espinal. He's really stepped up in Chapman's absence. But you know what? We're making our push for the playoffs, and we want to push hard and deep into the playoffs. And I think Chapman's a big part of this team. And I want to know, when do we start actually showing our defensive hand going into the end of this season? And, you know, Schneider and Clement, they've been great too. But we have our team moving forward, and I'd like to see it on a regular basis. So I think, you know, this Texas series coming up, and I think even the Boston series, we need to play our players that are going to be there in the postseason. We need to get them pumped and get them ready. Kiermaier was a perfect example today. I love the guy. I'm glad he's in our defense, and I just want to see our team do it moving forward. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, Ian, thank you for the call. Thanks for joining us on Jays Talk. I know what Ian means. Like, he wants to see the best players play in the lineup every single day. For me, I think that does include David Schneider at the very least. David Schneider should, in some way, shape, or form, even if he hasn't had the most heralded last 2 games, let's say, he is, for me, a guy who needs to be playing every day. And I do think that the glut of infielders this team has, and Schneider makes that decision even a little bit more difficult because he's left in second and certainly third as well. But if you're counting him as an infielder, then you basically have to make decisions on Clement, Schneider, certainly Spencer Horwitz as well, Matt Chapman, Kevin Biggio, and Santiago Espinal.
Well, and then you even think about, okay, so are you playing Whit Merrifield in left,
right,
or are you playing Varsho in left? And okay, maybe if you play you play Merrifield in right and keep Varsho in left, then you're DHing Springer. And then if you're DHing Springer, then maybe you're not playing Brandon Belt. So there's a lot going on, which I think is what they want.
Yes,
they want to be
yes.
able to mix and match a bit. Obviously, some health has restricted them. I think if Matt Chapman was healthy right now, he'd be in the lineup. But he's not healthy right now. But I do feel like they treated Bo Bichette the way they treated him this series so that he'd be right for Texas. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a lesser team in the Kansas City Royals than the Texas Rangers, no doubt about it. And the games against Texas are even bigger, even if they were equal teams, because of where the Blue Jays and Rangers stack up in the wild card, how important those wins would be. Brandon Belt, I would feel like is going to return in the Texas series too. There was some discussion that he might return Saturday. Then you get a lefty on the mound today. Feels like it doesn't make sense to bring in a left-handed hitter like Belt in that situation. So at least I think you get a little stability probably coming in the Texas series where you, I think, see more Bichette and Bichette at short and then more Brandon Belt in the lineup, whether it be at first base or DH.
It does make the question even more interesting about when Chappie comes back in the not-too-distant future. It could be for the Rangers series, maybe mid-series, or maybe towards next weekend, depending on how he's feeling. But and he has been, since you and I have been here this weekend, he has been taking grounders and taking some hacks at the cage. So he clearly is closer to return than he was last week.
The days of he can't
week.
Grip a bat are probably over.
those are behind us, I think, which is a good news, right?
Yes,
certainly for him and certainly for the Blue Jays as well. But knowing that he is nearing a return, I mean, before I would have said perhaps Espinal was closer to going down over Ernie Clement in terms of if you had to send someone down. Maybe, and again, a lot of this hinges on health. If Brandon Bell is healthy, it probably will end up being Spencer Horwitz at this point.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's pretty. It's hard to fit him in.
It is. Yeah, that's just what it is, right? It's not because he has played poorly by any means. It's just they do have a lot of guys, and they only have a certain amount of positions
it's
in which they can play.
First base and DH. So. There's two other guys that only play first and DH.
Why don't we take a quick break, Ben?
Sure.
And when we come back, we'll go back to the text line, 590-590, name and location. A lot of people want to talk about Jordan Romano's adventurous end to this ballgame. We have not yet spoken about Jose Berríos, and certainly a lot to get to in the bullpen as well. Yanis Cabrera pitching very well in for one out, certainly, but pitching well nonetheless. And, of course, we'll check out a very important Major League standings watch presented by Bet365 as well. Still lots to come on Jays Talk. Show and Ben with you until on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to Jay's Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Joe and Ben with you until the bottom of the hour. Go back to the text line in a sec, 590-590, name and location. But a very quick check and a very important check of the Major League Standings Watch presented by Bet365. Download the Bet365 app and check out the latest odds for today's baseball games. 19+, play responsibly, Ontario only. The Blue Jays, Ben, getting some help on the out-of-town scoreboard. First of all, this has really no bearing on it, but the Corbin Burnes had a no-hitter today, and he went eight innings, did not give up a hit. The game went to the bottom of the 11th inning with no hits. So there had never been a combined or a normal no-hitter that had gone 11 innings in the history of Major League Baseball.
It's pretty nuts. You'd think maybe once.
Yeah, like one time, right? In a sport that has existed for well over 100 years, you think it would happen like once. But now at top of the 13th inning, this game is tied 3-3. So no more no-hitters.
Still only two hits for the New York Yankees in 13 innings.
That's pretty wild,
jeez,
honestly.
Man.
Maybe that's a testament to the Brewers, but they have also not scored. So anyways, that game is in the top of the 13th inning, tied 3-3. The Rangers were trailing the A's, but they do now lead bottom eight. They are doubling up the Athletics. They lead 9-4 over Oakland. The Red Sox, the game is in a delay against the Orioles, but right now in the eighth inning, the Red Sox lead 7-3. And a couple of finals that do impact the out-of-town scoreboard. Rays do beat the Mariners 6-3, and the Astros just demolished the San Diego Padres 12-2. The Astros beat San Diego. So with all that being said, this is how the current Bet365 standings watch shakes out. In the wild card race, with the win, the Rays are 88-56. The Blue Jays, with their win, are now the second wildcard team. They are 80-63. The Seattle Mariners, with the loss, they have lost three straight. They are 79-64. So they are a full game back of the Blue Jays. And entering play, because this game's not over, the Rangers are 77-64. So the Rangers are a game back of the Mariners. for that third wildcard spot. So I guess if they win, which it looks like they might, they'll be a half game back of Seattle. So a lot of moving parts in this wildcard race. The Seattle Mariners and the Rangers still have to play each other a whole whack of times for the end of the season, and that, of course, sets up the four-game series coming into the Rogers Center tomorrow against the Rangers with even more importance.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge for the Blue Jays that they have jumped not only in front of Texas now, but Seattle too. Like you mentioned, I think it's seven more head-to-head matchups that Seattle and Texas have in the final, you know, 20-ish games of the season for those two teams. And if you can maintain any cushion on them, you put yourself in a good spot because you know those seven times that one of them has to lose. It's not like they're guaranteed to win every single other game they're going to play either. But for the Blue Jays, it is, I mean, so much more favorable looking than it was just a week or two ago, frankly. So that's pretty huge for Toronto that they're up in this spot. Still a lot of work to do.
Yes.
But they were, what, like 2.5 back? Maybe even 3 back at one point not that long ago. So a lot of ground has been made up against this weaker part of the schedule.
I want to say it was against the Guardians. Maybe they were 2 or 2.5 games back out of a playoff spot because they lost 2 of those 3 games. And now here we are, what, 2 weeks later, and they're a number of games up or the second wild card. It just there's going to be a lot of shifting around over the next couple of weeks. And I know the Yankees are 70-72 on the season. Their Blue Jays still have to play 2 series against the Yankees. Those games are never easy just because interdivision games, I think, never really are. And, of course, the same 2 series against the Rays. And the Rays have lost a lot of guys, and you would think the Blue Jays can take advantage of that in some ways. But the Rays are still a very dangerous team because, I've said this a million times, but they seem to get contributions from wherever they feel like, it certainly seems like. So the Rays are always going to be a tough out.
Just went back to look. The Blue Jays on August 29th, 3.5 games behind Seattle, Houston, and Texas, who were all tied at that point. They now lead 2 of those 3 teams.
Yeah, they're only behind on Houston. They have 2 less wins than Houston, but and 1 more loss than Houston.
So game and a half.
A game and a half, yeah. So, I mean, it's not an insurmountable games to overcome, although it wouldn't really matter because the Blue Jays aren't chasing the Astros because they're division leaders.
Unless Toronto moves itself to the West Coast at some point.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that happens. No,
good
seems,
weather.
Seems unlikely. But that is Ben Schulman. I'm Joe Alley, and that's our quick check of the Major League Standings Watch presented by Bet365. All right, let's go back to the text line, Ben. 590-590, name and location. Let's talk about Jordan Romano because a lot of people are texting in about Romano, and I'm just going to read you a whole bunch of these texts, okay?
Yeah.
I don't care. This is from Jay in Regina. I don't care how many saves Romano has this season. He is not a closer for a team that is trying to be World Series caliber. This one has no name on it. It just says, still no trust in Romano. Peter from East, I think, again, East EG. I'm assuming it's East Quillenbury. Someone tweeted tweeted me earlier to say it was Etobicoke, but
there's
no G
in
Etobicoke.
So I could see someone saying, like, Eglinton area. Yeah, maybe.
You know what? Maybe, but the area code would suggest that it is not in the downtown
GTA
core.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm guessing it's East Quillenbury, but Peter just says 4 words. I hate Jordan Romano.
I mean, that one's pretty harsh. Strong. I don't know. That one, you know.
Boy, yeah, they're all out like that. Jason from Bedford in Nova Scotia, huge win today. So happy to see a series sweep. I do wonder why we would use Romano today, knowing we have a big series starting tomorrow. Why not bring in Chad Green here, see how it goes, rest Romano a bit, knowing the demand on him this weekend already. And then this one, perhaps also a little harsh, Vincent Aurora. Hey, guys, big fan. Any chance we move away from Romano being the closer, trusting that job to someone else? Watching him close games is becoming a complete and utter joke. And so, look, he struggled a little bit today.
Yeah.
I agree that it wasn't pretty. It got my heart rate up a little bit more than usual. But I'm not sure you really want to see. Like, maybe
are you going to switch closer 20 games left in the season when your guy's 34 for 37 in saves
happening.
This year? Like, I mean, look, it hasn't been as good of a year as last year, I don't think, although he's actually been more efficient converting saves this year than last year. But, yeah, like, I don't think that the reception – I think the reception for Hicks has been positive. I'm not sure it's been better than it has been for Romano. And frankly, I think that you end up being fairly spoiled when you're asking for someone who's done better than Romano, who in his career is 95 for 106 in save situations. So 90% of the games he's come into, he's closed. Is he as good as Emmanuel Clase? I don't think so. Is he as good as Felix Bautista? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. After that, it's kind of anyone's ball game, and he's certainly in the mix there. I mean, clearly, you know, people are in support of him around Major League Baseball. He has been an all-star in consecutive seasons at this point. I agree that it was not good today. There have been some adventures. It's not always the lowest heart rate thing. But they, A, are never going to switch closers with 20 games left in a season when their closer is 34 for 37. And B, I don't know who people want to be the closer, really.
I guess it would have to be...
It would have to be Jordan Hicks.
Hicks or and again, I think it's way too early for this, but I feel like there's some sentiment, and this is, take this with a grain of salt, for Chad Green to be the closer.
Chad Green, who gave up a run in the last appearance we saw him in two-thirds. And that's nothing against Chad Green,
sure.
But it's like, what have you done for me lately? Okay, we see Romano load the bases today, so all of a sudden Chad Green looks great. But I like Chad Green. That's not really a guy who's ever been a closer. He was the setup man for the Yankees at one point. He's coming off Tommy John, and he's made four appearances and you know, given up five runs, only two of them earned. But I think at this point, you know, I think they're certainly not going to go to Chad Green to close games.
No, I just don't think so.
That's at all in the realm of reality. And I think that it's unlikely that on a consistent basis they go to Hicks. On the note of why do they use him today, I think it's still a safe situation. So you're going to put your closer out there. It was the widest margin you'd have a ninth inning save situation, up 5-2, but I think that they don't want to get too cute probably right now, and they want to make sure that they lock down games. So has to be better than today. Don't get me
wrong. Yes.
It certainly has to be better than today. Did not think he was good today, but they're not going to change closers, regardless of how I feel about him. They're not going to change closers. Like, watch. It's not going to happen.
This is not going to happen, yeah. And again, maybe if they had someone even better than Romano, maybe then he would be the setup guy, but they don't.
It's like a few of those guys, frankly.
Yeah.
Like, maybe I didn't say Josh Hader. Like,
sure.
Maybe I add him in. You know, who, again, even last year was not. So it's really...
Yeah, Devin Williams. But the truth is...
Again, who last year was not.
And he wasn't like, great. The truth is, there are just very few pitchers who operate in the closer role who are better than Jordan Romano. That's the case for all teams in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
Most teams don't have a closer as good as Jordan Romano. It's an even more an adventure for some of these other teams as well. So I get it. Don't get me wrong. I do get it, because in the last two games has been a bit of an adventure, because of course he went four outs, I think, against the against Oakland,
great.
And he wasn't great. He gave up the home run. I think it was a one run or two run home run. Anyways, it was a home run that made the game much closer in the Oakland game, which on the fourth when they won 6-5. But I mean, he had one inning of relief work against the Rockies. He struck out one in one inning to wrap up the game in the first game against the Rockies. You know, he went an inning and two-thirds against the Guardians. So it's just – he is still very good. And I know people kind of are like, oh, well, it doesn't matter about the amount of saves he has. It's about how he looks. And it's about the strikeouts.
His job is to save games.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that's the closest job. And 37 times they've asked him to do it, and 34 times he's done it.
Sportsnet stats saying Romano recording his 34th save of the season, second most in the American League, 95 career saves, third most in the American League since 2020, the fifth most in the history of the Blue Jays, which actually is pretty remarkable.
And I mean, you get put in a position to save games if your team is good. That helps your overall save numbers, but it's not just that he has a high quantity of saves. He has a high efficiency. Like, he saves the majority of opportunities he comes into. He's at like 92% this year, and you're just not going to – no one's 100%. And no one looks good in every inning they pitch. There are very few guys probably that are considered better than he is at his job in Major League Baseball. And those teams are not giving up those guys. Like, the Cleveland Guardians let almost everyone go. They're not going to let Emmanuel Clase A go. He's phenomenal. He's one of the best closers of this century. So, I mean, frankly, Romano more than likely, unless something changes drastically in his career, is going to go down as one of the most prolific closers the Blue Jays have ever had.
He probably might already be one of the best Canadian pitchers ever, maybe?
Like, yeah, I mean, there's...
It's a long way to go.
Certainly,
but
in the relief ranks.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, there's obviously, like, John Axford and Eric Gagne had both starts in reliever years in his career. But, yeah, I mean, he's like, three or four, I think, on the list of saves by Canadian. And, you know, he didn't pitch well today, but he's still going to be the closer tomorrow and the next day and for the remainder of this season.
I wanted to get to Jose Berríos, who we haven't talked about at all. Just very quickly on Berríos, kind of like a ho-hum good outing for Berríos.
For
sure. Funnily enough, seven innings, five hits allowed, two runs, both of which were earned, seven strikeouts, two walks for Berríos. I'm still always kind of surprised when the contact for him that he gives up gets out of the infield. I know he gives up a home run here and there, but, I mean, he gets a lot of he gets a lot of balls on the ground and a lot of weak flyouts into the shallow outfield. And obviously in the sixth inning is when he ran into the biggest amount of trouble. Springer doesn't pick up a ball cleanly, which lets Isbell gets all the way to third on a leadoff triple, essentially, with no outs. Bobby Witt Jr. brings him home. Salvador Perez scores as well, or gets an RBI ground out to score Witt after Witt steals third base. And I don't know. Most of Brio's pitches looked pretty good, but it's just the margin for error had him walking the tightrope, as the starting rotation has done for so much of the year. But it was good after that wild bottom of the sixth inning, which we can wrap up on in a sec here. But after all that craziness happened, it was good to see him come back out in the seventh and pretty tidily put away the Royals, as he had for so much of the game. So it was nice he ended it on a relative high note.
Yeah,
and he was pumped
Barrios.
Up too.
Yeah, he ends up getting that strikeout and stranding. I think it was first and second. There were a couple singles in that inning. And keeping the game tied at that point, Kevin Kiermaier rewards him with the home run to help him get the win in the bottom of the seventh. Yeah, Barrios was good. I think that, you know, his command was a little bit worse than it has been sometimes, you know, with the multiple walks. He allowed a little bit of hard contact. But I do think in that sixth, he's really hard done by on a ball that just should be a double, shouldn't be a triple. They don't award an error, but I think that ball for Isbell, even Isbell's thinking that that's a two-bagger, yeah, not a three-bagger, and you pitch a different way when there's a guy on third base and nobody out, then second base and nobody out, and he ends up at least relatively, you know, staving off the Royals, and then turns in his longest outing of the second half. So I think you have to be tremendously happy with how Barrios pitched today, and for the Blue Jays, it's just another good starting performance, and they have, against some of the weaker teams, granted, mm-hmm, paired that now with, you know, five or more runs a lot of times over these last 15 or so games, and that's why you're going to win 10 of them.
Can I just say, in the bottom of the sixth inning, Ragan's losing his footing and falling down, and
so he
loses the footing. The Royals manager and I guess like their medical staff come out to kind of check on him, and he gives him the thumbs up, and then it kind of looked like they were still going to come out, and he kind of was like, "No, stop!" He threw up the stop sign. Do not come out here to the mound.
Yeah.
The very next pitch was a wild throw. Like, there's no way Salvador Perez, even if he had leapt straight up into the air, would have gotten that ball. Ben Nicholson-Smith had a great line that it was a 50-cent-esque, which I thought was just hilarious. Like, that is so true. I don't know if anyone's ever seen the 50-cent first pitch, but
I think we, at this point,
I think everyone
YouTube
has.
Era,
but
yeah,
it's,
we've all
but
seen
it's
it.
pretty hilarious. It was very 50-cent-esque, so kudos to BNS for that. But then he did it again. Like, I honestly can't recall the last time that happened. There was a text on the text line that was actually kind of sympathetic. Yeah, here he is, Jeff from At the Dome. Great game. I think I was the only person in the park not cheering during those wild pitches. The KC coach had to pull the starter and didn't, and it felt like watching a train wreck. He'd been pitching a great game, which is true. He had been pitching a great game.
Yeah.
And it kind of just, like, you're not going to remember that because of the way it ended, which was truly, to use a term, wild.
Yeah, I mean, even frankly, with the line that he ends with, he still pitched a very solid game. You know, if you don't look from the Blue Jay perspective, it's a huge bummer that a 26 and two-thirds innings consecutive scoreless streak ends because he slips and then never really finds his footing again. It looked, Ben Nicholson-Smith and I at least talked about it at the break, it looked more mechanical than something in his head, to be honest. It looked more like he wasn't confident in his landing spot, or he just was literally slipping. And I will agree, like, it was kind of sad. I was sitting up here. He's a young guy. He's really breaking through. This was a big start against an opponent with a lot of cachet. And it slips away from him. Yeah. And the Royals didn't hit enough for him to really have a good chance to win this game anyway. But, the Blue Jays were gifted one there. They took advantage. They end up scoring three other runs. So, in theory, you know, maybe you win 3-2 anyway.
Sure.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But it was the turning point in this game for sure when you hand 180 feet to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and 270 feet to Davis Schneider. It's going to be tough for any team to win a game when you do that. And it was tough for Ragans, who pitched really well today.
That is Ben Shulman. I am Sho Ali. Thank you for listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Crown Rust Protection. New and used vehicle prices are rising and inventory is scarce. Avoid the hassle of buying prematurely by making your vehicle last longer with Crown Rust Protection. For a special offer on rust protection, visit crown.com today. Well, Ben, we get to do it all again starting tomorrow. A very important series against the Texas Rangers starts tomorrow down at the Rogers Center. What do you think? 3 of 4 coming for the Blue Jays?
I think they got a really good shot. Texas struggling really on the pitching side. I'll say the Blue Jays take 3 of 4.
I like it. You know what? I'm going 3 of 4 as well, and a 3 of 4 against the Rangers would give you the season series against the Rangers, which is important for any tie-breaking scenarios. That's Ben Shulman. For him, for Ben Wagner, Ben Nicholson-Smith, Tom Young, Armin Zargarian, Connor Lamont, I'm Sho Ali. Thanks for being with us. Jays sweep away the Royals. Tomorrow, Blair and Barker have got you covered for the Rangers series. They have got you covered all week long. Ben and I are back for the Red Sox series next weekend. We'll talk to you then.